We are the space robots. We are here to protect you. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pusher Robot.
And this is the Shover Robot.
And we're here to protect you from the terrible secret of space. And we are very serious tonight for a very serious topic.
It's very serious.
Oh, man, this goes. Heads up, first of all, I have a head cold right now. So if I devolve into a coughing fit, I'll try to keep it away from the microphone so nobody has to hear it.
Have you tried wearing a hat?
I
hear that helps keep your head warm if your head's cold.
Okay. So, tonight's topic is going to be about weapons in space, which has been something that we've wanted to talk about for a while, and something we actually have talked about quite a bit. But now we get to dedicate a whole episode to it, and Shover is going to go wild because he likes things that explode in space.
Well now, that's a misconception. I mean, rockets explode in a good way, and that's just rocket propulsion. And then you've got stars which explode in space, and that's just fusion. I mean, that's just beautiful energy going throughout the galaxy and the solar systems, and it's what keeps us warm at night. Yes, it is what keeps us warm at night. Anyway, and explosions don't really even work that well in space. Although, as a side note, they are doing, I need to check the status of that fire in space test.
I don't think they've done that yet. I think that's still coming up.
They launched the resupply capsule, and it's this one that's going to come back down that they're going to light a fire inside of it.
Yeah.
Really cool. We'll touch on that afterwards.
Yeah.
Anyway, so explosions in space.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about space weapons, folks.
So, space weapons.
Yep.
So, basically, there hasn't actually been a lot of weapons in space. Basically, every mission is armed with at least one pistol. Not because they expect to be fighting aliens or anything, because, of course, firing a projectile weapon inside of a fragile space capsule where even the smallest rupture is going to get you killed is a really dumb idea, but it's in the recovery capsule so that if they land in a spot that they weren't expecting to, like...
A.K.A. anywhere else in Russia, besides where the cities are.
Yeah, like a lake or something out in the middle of the wilderness, they have some kind of personal protection.
Siberia.
Yeah, basically. And the only large-scale weapon that was deployed is something we actually touched on earlier, which was the Almaz stations were armed with a 23mm Richter rapid-fire cannon, which they only tested once, and that was without any crew on board because they were afraid that it was going to be such, like, so much noise and so much vibrations that it may shake the station apart because they just, you know, didn't know. So they fired it kind of off into the blue. The idea was that with this 23mm cannon, that if somebody, like a rival spaceship or something, were to come up and try to dock at the station, they could use the control thrusters to turn the station at it and shoot it, which, it, you know, I guess is a thing that works. But it honestly was never used, and since the Almaz program, we've never actually put... Well, there's no declassified information about a weapon in space. I mean, you know, we're working off of public access information here.
Of course.
No tricks. I mean, there totally could be like a laser cannon in space right now, and we, if it's classified, we wouldn't know about it.
That's no moon.
Yeah, seriously.
It's a space station.
It's a satellite.
Hey, it's the ISS. But, you know, what's cool about their those pistols and stuff that they do bring in space, I know the old Soviet ones, I think they replaced them now, but the old Soviet... survival pistols are pretty freaking cool. They've got three barrels, and I think it's like half shotgun, half pistol, half, and like the buttstock is a detachable machete, and yeah, it's pretty awesome. If you get your hand on one of those things, it's just like the ultimate zombie fighting machine weapon, multi-death destruction tool. But I digress. That Almaz cannon, though, pretty freaking cool. Definitely interesting, though. I wonder if they thought about how much that would affect the orientation of the station. Be interested to see what shooting a cannon off.
Like, I imagine a 23mm round, like, it's a big slug, but it's definitely not going to carry enough energy to knock a station of that mass appreciably out of orbit, especially if they have a reaction control thruster that will keep it stationary. If they were going to launch, like, you know, a missile, which the Almaz station... that Almaz 4, which never actually went up, it was supposed to have two rockets in addition to the 23mm cannon, But they never did that mission, so we never got to see how that worked out. I imagine that something larger like a rocket would actually have a possibility of deorbiting the station if they screwed it up.
It all comes down to Sir Isaac Newton.
Yeah. So we just don't know if that's what would have happened, but it'd be kind of cool to see. I mean, just a test.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a test. I mean, unless Spice Pirates are coming about, and then you're going to want to have that 23-millimeter Richter rapid-fire cannon, say that five times fast. But yes, so weapons in space. Well, I mean, okay, so level with me here. ICBMs. Technically space weapons? Maybe not quite. I mean, they do go into space.
Yeah. So there are some distinctions here. The ICBM is a ground-to-ground weapon, as in it's launched from the surface of the Earth, and it lands on the surface of the Earth. It's not meant to target anything. It probably could be used to target a satellite, but I don't think that they're programmed to hit something that small and that fast without the benefit of satellite surveillance, which you can't really have if you're targeting the satellites themselves.
True.
So they are space weapons in the sense that they transit through space on the way to their target, but they don't originate from space, and they're not used to target things in space. So they're kind of like an honorary mention.
They are. And I got to talk about them just because they're kind of cool.
Yeah,
I
go
mean,
for it.
You got to think about these weapons. They're basically, go back to the Cold War. You know, the Soviets and the United States are not quite sure who the big bad dog on the street is. And so they start stockpiling these rockets, and they strap a nuclear warhead to the top. And they're like, you know what? Shoot. What's better than a rocket with a nuclear warhead on it? How about a rocket with 10 nuclear warheads on the top of it? And then that was the Peacekeeper. The Peacekeeper had 10 multiple independently targetable reentry vehicles, or MIRVs. And I just have to say that is a scary, scary weapon system. I mean, you're talking about with one rocket launch, you can destroy 10 large areas of...
Yeah, 10 cities.
Yeah, 10 cities.
So, basically.
I mean, and really, really, really glad we didn't end up going into nuclear war, and hope we never have to, because that would just be terrifying.
Yeah, the only thing that nukes are good for is launching spacecraft into orbit, so...
Oh, yes, Project Orion.
Yeah.
I suppose if Project Orion ever actually happened... That would be kind of a space weapon.
It kinda, yeah. You could. At that point, we can classify just about anything, because any exhaust from a spacecraft could be weaponized in a certain sense, in the fact that you have a fast moving, you know, you either have a fast moving vehicle or you have an incredibly destructive force that's being used to propel a fast moving vehicle.
Well, yeah, but Project Orion was launching nuclear warheads out the bottom of it and riding on the shockwaves like you're surfing.
So, you know.
I mean, though, you know, they never did end up working out for him. They did do a demo, if you will, a proof of concept with a scale model of it and C4. So it would shoot C4 charges out the back of it, and it, like, got up to, like, 300, 500 feet in the air, just dumping out little C4, and then the C4 would explode, and then the little thing would jump up a little bit more and then drop another piece of C4 out. Anyway...
I'm pretty sure I use that glitch in Legend of Zelda to get into places that you're not supposed to.
Probably.
I do.
I definitely, and that's the grenade jump from Halo. If anyone.
Oh yeah, true.
Grenade jump in Halo. It's the same concept.
See, all good ideas come from video games.
Well, this was before video games.
I think.
Anyway, I digress again. We'll talk about Project Orion some other time, I'm sure, if we haven't already. And then there was, of course, after the missiles got a little bit scary, we decided that the Strategic Defense Initiative, we needed to have some more defenses. And this is actually a really cool program, because out of it you got the Project Excalibur, which essentially never officially worked, as far as we all know. But it was an X-ray laser that would be used to essentially deflect incoming missiles during their ascent stage, so that they would not go into their intended targets, or at least defuse them so that they would just kind of explode in space. So, I mean, we were going to put an X-ray laser up in space, and about this time, Ronald Reagan was really putting a lot of money into the SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, and it really kind of put the scare on the Soviets. It was another one of the reasons. It was a bargaining chip that we used to say, okay, we're going to end this Cold War. They were like, okay, you guys get rid of your space lasers. And they were like, okay, we'll get rid of all these bombs. And we were like, well, okay, because we didn't have space lasers yet, but they totally thought that we did.
Or maybe we did and just nobody knew.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool stuff.
Wouldn't really know about it for another, what is it, 20 years? It's like a 50-year declassification period, I think, for stuff like that.
True fact.
So.
And then there was Bambi. I mean, what possible thing, how much wonderful could you get with the name of Bambi? I mean, you think this little cute little deer. No. Bambi was the ballistic missile boost interceptor. I love it. It's wonderful. So every time you think of Bambi, don't think of deer. Think of ballistic missile boost interceptor. Anyway, so Bambi was essentially a bunch of missiles that you strapped to satellites. And that if ICBMs were launched at us, that we would shoot out these missiles. They would open up a big metal net. And the metal net would destroy the missile on impact due to the relative velocities. It's essentially an anti-air missile, but it's in space.
Yeah. Big grabber.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Big grabby system.
Big grabby system shoots out nets and things. I mean, that's kind of how anti-aircraft missiles work. They shoot out a big metal grid that rips through the airframe of the aircraft depending on the design. But I digress again. All right.
There's going to be a lot of that.
Yes.
A lot of digressing.
A lot of digression. Well, you know, it's space weapons. We can afford this a little bit.
Yeah. So, essentially, there hasn't been a lot of weapons in space, and currently, since we're not in a space-related war with any country, or even a Cold War with any country at the moment, the likely future of space weapons is going to be more dedicated towards preventing asteroids or other space debris from impacting the planet. And the news right now has been just completely filled with people getting slightly more and more scared of the possibility of a large meteor, you know, impacting the planet, asteroid until it hits, then it's meteorite, but, you know, we went over that. So, large chunk of rock or ice, well, something. Big chunk of thing crashing into the planet. We want to stop it. So, weaponry is a decent solution for that. The possibility of destroying something into sufficiently small pieces that they all burn up during reentry is one. More likely it's going to be that we use a weapon or a booster to redirect a incoming body and make it so that it passes by our planet, especially if it's in a case where it's like an asteroid that's getting slowly closer and closer and closer to our orbit as it goes around the sun, and then the time before it's supposed to hit us, when it's at its closest but not hitting us, you know, go out there, catch it, and then just put a booster on it and slowly during its next orbit get it a little bit farther away so it no longer hits the planet.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, using nuclear weapons or any sort of weapons from space to deflect an asteroid is generally a bad idea in my book. It's kind of more of a last resort.
Yeah.
Unlike the movie Armageddon, I believe.
Yeah, it was Armageddon.
Doesn't work quite as well as we would hope.
Or Space Cowboys? I always get those two confused.
Space Cowboys was the old guys go up and take out the Russian missile satellite.
That's right. Okay.
You know. Armageddon was the one that we took a bunch of nukes and put them on an asteroid and blew it in half so it would go around the Earth instead of...
Yeah.
Or something like that. Anyway, it doesn't actually happen. Don't work like that, unfortunately.
Yeah. In reality, using a blunt destructive force like a nuclear weapon would more than likely just fracture the asteroid into large chunks that don't burn up but spread the destruction over a slightly larger surface area, even if it's a slightly, you know, less powerful impact in each of the areas.
But hey, sharing is caring, so
yeah, you know, except when it's global destruction.
Yeah, that's just kind of cruel irony.
Yep.
But space weapons, all right. Everybody likes them. So what else we got? Well, instead of just using, benign methods for moving asteroids or something else, you can always rain down annihilation upon the unsuspecting populace below, as our wonderful science fiction pop culture likes to throw at us every single time. I mean, we've got the Death Star, we've got the Death Star 2, and then we've got now, what is it? What's the one from the new Star Wars movie?
Laser Moon or something like that? That might be the Arlnauts thing.
Star Killer Base or something like that.
I don't know. It was just like Death Star Senior. Like
Death Star Shotgun.
Like Death Star 2, like Vader Boogaloo or something like that. I don't know.
Anyway, So, I mean, space weapons are scary because they're in space and we can't see them and they can kill us. So what can you expect from space weapons? Well, I'm here to tell you there's a wide variety of ways that you can weaponize space, and not all of them are good. Mind you, I'm not a huge proponent of weaponizing space. Don't get my jubilation of exciting, you know, conversations. Don't take it the wrong way. I really don't think we should put weapons in space. Should be a peaceful thing, but right now we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about if it wasn't, how kind of interesting it would be. All right. So my personal favorite is going to be Rods from God.
Yeah, I know it would.
If you saw the movie G.I. Joe Retaliation, this is basically what Cobra Commander unleashes upon London, and it's really quite simple. You just drop a telephone pole-sized piece of tungsten from orbit, and then gravity just kind of does the rest, and it impacts. Just the sheer kinetic energy alone is the equivalent of several megaton nuclear detonations, and it's kind of cool. I mean, you're just literally dropping rocks from space.
Why tungsten, you may ask?
Why tungsten? Tungsten is freaking heavy as heck, and it also doesn't melt very well.
Yeah.
In fact, it doesn't melt at all. I had a tungsten wedding band that I had often joked with my wife that said, hey, if I ever end up going to space and something terrible goes wrong, at least you'll have the wedding band to survive the reentry procedures.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a reason that tungsten is used in a lot of high heat applications, and it really doesn't have, like, it's very, very, very difficult to melt. So a tungsten rod would retain most of its mass, whereas if you dropped an iron rod of a similar weight, it would burn up so much that you would have kind of a flimsy shell of its original, you know, piece hitting the ground, because it would just kind of ionize on its way down. Because stuff traveling real fast and hitting against atmospheric friction tends to do that.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, and you just essentially have to use more iron to get the same effect, which may or may not be a problem. But if you're thinking about using this weapon system, which I don't think you should, keep it in the movies, keep it in Hollywood, folks, it's going to be an incredibly expensive system. Because, I mean, you basically are taking, you have to take the energy, nothing's free, folks, no energy is ever free. You have to take the energy to launch that thing up into space. And so you end up using more energy to propel this thing into orbit than drop it, than it's dropping and exploding does on impact.
So essentially it would just be a lot cheaper to just take the payload and launch the rocket with the payload at the target instead of bothering to bring it all the way up into space and then back down.
Absolutely. That is, in fact, unless you use in-situ resources, which if you have listened to any of these podcasts, you know that's kind of a pet project of mine. Basically, you could really pretty easily use space resources to make yourself a lot of stuff in space, and then now you can just simply just drop it on them. I mean, it's a very common and easy concept to understand. I mean, people are afraid of asteroids. Well, it's really quite the same thing.
Yeah, just manufactured asteroid chunks.
Right, or just asteroid chunks. Mm-hmm. I mean, the very same technology that we use to move asteroids into orbits for resource extraction could also be used to throw them into orbit to, you know, fall upon a major city. But let's not do that, folks, because that kind of ruins space for everybody and makes everyone just get all sorts of jittery and frustrated and dead. Good book. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress also touches on this kind of principle a little bit, except they're launching rocks from the moon at the Earth, and, well, that works just about the same way.
Yep.
So that's kinetic, just pure kinetic weapons. It's just bullets from space, except it's just junk from space. Then, of course, there is the laser. Everybody likes lasers, right?
We all do. That's why we're here.
I mean, lasers. Death Star. I mean, we've already touched on this. It's simple. But the kind of cool thing is, I've heard about is using not just a laser based in space, but you could also use just a big frickin' mirror and then direct the laser from a ground station to somewhere else on the Earth. So,
and I mean, to a lesser extent, this doesn't even have to be a sense where you're directing like a very focused beam of you know, laser energy or sunlight energy or anything, and destroying something. You could build a apparatus that would increase the temperature of an area by 8 degrees Celsius, which would destroy the local ecosystem, you know, just as, you know, minor changes like that over long periods of time tend to do. So you could ruin a country economically if they are an agricultural-based company with one of these weapons without ever having to, you know, build a very tightly focused array.
Yeah, absolutely. I never even thought about it that way. That'd be very artistic.
Very subtle. I'm sure somebody would notice, but
there's energy coming out in space, and it's coming down. And I don't know what's wrong with me, but I've been wearing my SPF 50, and I get sunburned. Look at he split.
Yeah, I think somebody would notice when they had like three extra suns, just kind of hovering around their spot, particularly.
But you're going to run into issues with this, just like anything else. The atmosphere. I mean, the Air Force played around with giant lasers strapped to aircraft. I got the joy to see YAL 1, which was the Air Force's idea of how to make a 747 cooler, which was simply strap a freaking huge ass laser to the nose of the thing, and you've got a laser on a plane. I mean, really, it was designed to the same thing as SDI systems. Basically, your objective is to destroy a ballistic missile during its ascent stage, which is pretty difficult, but that was what its purpose was: put a giant laser on a plane. Pretty cool. That was a really cool thing to see. It's not anymore. It's at the boneyard now. I think the laser's still around though. But anyway, so they ran into issues though with like dust particles and smog or smoke in the atmosphere. Lasers tend to get a little bit jittery. Well, the light itself is a little bit refracted by it. I mean, you know, if you look outside, you see the sunset, that beautiful orange glow. The more beautiful your sunset is, generally, the more pollution you have, or particles at least, in the air. And that plays havoc with any sort of optics. If you're any sort of physics person, you know the pain of optics and dust and what a battle that can be, especially over long distances. And then you got to keep it focused. And well,
yeah.
Anyway, suffice it to say that planet Alderaan will not be being destroyed by a Death Star anytime soon. Thank goodness, though, for that.
Ironically, the easiest places to destroy with a space-based laser weapon are observatories, because they're located in the areas that present the least optical interference between the edge of space and the surface of the Earth.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
And then, of course, there's space weapons for use in space. I mean, in which case, lasers are freaking awesome, because it's vacuum.
Yeah.
And so shooting lasers in a vacuum is, like, awesome. And it works really well. Microwaves, there's another one. There's been a lot of talk about using microwaves to transmit power from a solar power satellite to the Earth. In one of my favorite books that I read by Ben Bova called PowerSat, basically a terrorist organization took over said power station in space, and then they put a death beam on it instead of a just nice little microwave antenna, and ended up frying half of Washington.
Good.
And Maryland. But, I mean, there you go. There's another thing. And that's... It's really pretty straightforward. Weapons in space. I mean, use your imagination and you can have one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd like to point out, though, that mankind needs to be a better steward with its big fancy toys, a.k.a. weapons, because... essentially, you can weaponize any sort of large energy scientific advancement. So my biggest fear is nuclear fusion becoming a weaponized platform. Nuclear fusion presents the ability to basically bring the entire world out of poverty, because it's essentially going to be really not free energy, but incredibly less expensive energy. And, I mean, you could run the city of Los Angeles on what would be a cubic centimeter of water, essentially, is how much energy you'd get out of that water using a different fusion process. I mean, fusion's always 15 years away, as they say, but I really hope that we can be better stewards and be more responsible as a society so that we can be entrusted with such powerful technologies.
And flying in the face of all that sentiment is some recent news that currently, and we always hate to point out specific names here, but China and America currently aren't doing so hot when it comes to relations, especially when it comes to space, because China has their own space station that we've talked about previously, and they really want to have a controlling presence in space be, you know, a part of their thing. And to that end, they have the understanding that in an American military sense, our observation satellites are the key to how we coordinate all of our, you know, military actions. So they've been developing, or it's said they've been developing, lots of weapons designed to target those satellites, whether that be missiles specifically made to come from the ground and hit satellites, or from satellites already up to hit other satellites, which would be an impressive tactical move, honestly. But we hope that it never comes to that kind of thing where we have people shooting satellites with other satellites to further some, you know, war initiative, which is always pretty dumb.
And this has been going on for quite some time. I know the United States Air Force experimented with using F-15s as a single-staged orbit platform. So you'd have an F-15 with a missile/rocket booster, and the F-15 would go up about as high as it could go. It would go ballistic a little bit because its engines flame out after a time. And then it would fling this missile out, which would then go the rest of the way up into space, and then shoot down a satellite with it.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is technology that we've been thinking about for a while, but it's bad. And why is it bad? Well, in 2007, China decided to blow up a satellite with one of its missiles. And that added 2,317 trackable debris that NASA is now tracking. And that's any debris basically the size of a golf ball and bigger that are now flying around the atmosphere, goodness no. Flying around in orbit,
yeah.
And it's a hazard to everything, basically. Not quite to the extent of the movie Gravity, which I personally think is a terrible movie, but if you like it, it's got some really cool high-definition images of the ISS getting ripped to shreds, so that's cool
something.
To see. If you like the thing, if some people just like to watch the world burn, and if that's your thing, well, there you go.
Yep.
It also added over 150,000 dust particles. Now you're like, dust particles? Come on now. What's a dust particle going to do? Well, if you got a dust particle or a grain of sand or something of that nature and it's traveling at a high speed, let's just throw out a number. I like to use this example because I used it in one of my homework assignments. If you're going to Mars and you run into a piece of dust coming in the opposite direction, you've got a delta, a change in velocity or a difference in velocity of about 15,000 meters a second. Now, a dust particle traveling at 15,000 meters per second has the impact energy of an A-10 armor-piercing round going through whatever is in its way. And so, as you can see in that good example, that, geez, even dust particles are going to be a problem.
Yeah. From a more earthbound example, we all know that they use the method of sandblasting or glass blasting to remove things like rust and top layers of metal from, you know, things like gas tanks and stuff when you're restoring a motorcycle, things like that. So you have to imagine that, except the dust or glass particles or whatever are traveling many, many times faster, hundreds of times faster, and they're hitting up against incredibly fragile and light pieces of technology that are supporting human beings. Because obviously, you know, the International Space Station isn't an iron-plated kind of deal, because we'd never have the money to get that up there. It's, you know, a light polymer-based, like, you know, metal and polymer shell that is sturdy enough to support a crew, but not sturdy enough to survive the impact of, like, a 3-minute sandblasting at that speed. So it would just eat away the shell of a spacecraft, at least any of the spacecraft that we're using today, in, you know, minutes, and cause breaches like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, it's a problem. And 30% of those debris, at least the trackable ones, will remain in orbit even up and through 2035, which is 19 years away.
Yep.
Huh. That stinks.
And
space littering jerks.
Yeah, it's like, and the more and more debris that you get up there, you know, it makes it that much harder to launch new spacecraft because you have to keep track of it. And if somebody slips up and misses a thing and you launch your spacecraft and it goes through a cloud of this kind of dust particles, it's just kind of gone.
Yep.
Not a whole lot you can do.
Hey, if you want to check out some of this debris, I know we've mentioned it before, but stuff in space. Stuff in dot space, am I right?
I believe so, yeah.
Stuff in dot space is an amazing website where you can just go and you can track, or you can look at the tracks of everything from low Earth orbit to geosynchronous orbit, and it actually tells you kind of what it is. Or where it came from, if it's just trash, if it's a rocket body, a satellite, whose satellite is it? What satellite is it? I mean, it won't tell you the classified secrets of the satellite, but it's going to at least let you know where it came from, which is pretty cool to see. And just runs on your browser.
Yep, it's our stuffin.space. One of our favorite websites that we just ogle forever.
It's a good screensaver for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And to kind of segue, this is my attempt at a segue, at least, into next week's or next month's topic, depending on how things go.
Yep.
Weapons in space, probably going to be impractical in the future. The reason being is we've had some pretty amazing advancements in computer technology, and to launch a kinetic attack against a satellite is not very Sun Tzu. It's much more artistic and better to instead just use a computer attack against space-based CISR and all sorts of assets up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a whole lot easier since we already have communication, and communication is, you know, more or less free. It's definitely, you know, nowhere in the ballpark of as expensive as sending up a physical device. So if you can just take control of the satellite and you can tell it to deorbit itself, or you can tell it to crash into another satellite if it has, you know, the ability to do so. Obviously not every satellite has reaction control thrusters or any kind of propulsion system. Some of them are just up there on the merits of their own orbit until it eventually decays. But there's plenty of stuff up there that you could just cause a big old mess with, just have it swing into some stuff.
Yep.
And so cybersecurity is a very important part. And next time, whether that be next week or next couple of weeks or whatever, we haven't been as even as we usually like to be, but it's been a busy spring. So computers in space are a huge deal and present their own challenges, and we're looking forward to talking about that next time.
I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
I can't do that, Dave. So I think it's about all we've got time for. Hope you learned a little bit about weapons in space and why they're kind of really bad. So, and why they're cool to think about, but we don't want them.
Great movies, bad in real life.
Yeah, seriously.
Just like zombies.
Yeah, seriously. So, until next time, I am the Pusher Robot.
And I'm the Shover Robot.
And you have gone down the stairs. I'm all about that space.